The Doctor Is In is a co-production of Ave Maria Radio and EWTN Radio and carried across the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network.
How are you, sir?
This is Pierre.
Oh.
I can't believe I'm talking to you, Dr. A the Great.
Well, I don't know about that.
I love listening to you. You have a personality just like my father.
I don't think you should feel helpless. You are helpless.
Doctor, I really appreciate that. That makes me feel a lot better.
You be at peace, or else I'm going to yell at you.
Trying to find a reason to speak to you. I think you're the best thing since sliced bread.
That Ray, he's something.
Thank you so much for what you're doing for all the parents out there.
I don't know what I can possibly do.
I don't either.
I'm getting my money worth, I think, at this phone call.
Now, from the studios of Living Bread Radio Network in Canton, Ohio, the hometown of Mother Angelica, here's Dr. Ray.
Good to have you with me. I'm Dr. Ray Guarendi. The program, The Doctor Is In. This is the Friday version of The Doctor Is In. This is Look Back Friday, where we take previous calls, edited at the adept and capable hand of Andrew Krucek, my producer man, and then I talk more about them. There's always something I want to say about them, and I get a chance to talk more. So we'll get to that in a moment. But for right now, opening monologue. If a parent comes to my office frustrated over a child's conduct, whether a child's 3 or 16, we talk for a while, and the parent sees certain things they can change for the better. Well, let's just say a lot of things they can change for the better. Too much yapping, too much arguing, too much negotiating. Not enough follow-through, not enough consistency, not enough perseverance, not enough supervision, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And we talk about how they can get these things. One of the more common questions they'll ask me is, should I change all at once or a little bit at a time? Should I try to deal with all these pieces of behavior that this child is doing, whether it's disrespect or tormenting siblings or not cooperative with chores or homework hassles? Whole range of stuff, or do I just choose one at a time? My answer almost always is you change all at once. Now, the main reason for this is because you couldn't change all at once even if you wanted to change all at once. We can't flip a switch and all of a sudden change habits that have been building up for 2, 3, 5, 6, 8, 10 years. We can't do that. So that's the first thing. But the second thing is, how do you determine whether a particular behavior that you're going to focus on? Let's say that disrespect, if in your pyramid of behaviors, disrespect is the most frustrating, the most irritating, the most common one. And you decide, all right, this is what I'm going to do about disrespect. This is my new house rule. This is my approach to this. How will you decide when that's fixed? What percentage? 50% better? 75% better? Never ever happening again. Of course, that's not going to be, but what is your measuring stick? In the meantime, while you're working on disrespect, do you still allow the sibling tormenting to go on because you're focusing all your efforts on disrespect? Do you still allow the bedtime problems to go on? Do you still allow the overuse of the cell phone to go on? Do you still allow the neglecting of chores to go on? Do you still allow the school hassle to go on in terms of schoolwork, homework? You see what I'm saying? You're going to lose time. If it takes me, let's say you could even, assuming you can even get the disrespect problem down by 75% in 2 months. By the way, is there any habit you have that you can improve by 75% in 2 months? So let's assume that you can do this. Well, you've still allowed all the other stuff to go on for 2 months. And the other stuff is also a source of arguing, hence disrespect. So, here's the next question. How much are they intertwined? In other words, if, for example, this child is mistreating a sibling, and you're trying to do something about it the way you used to do something about it, with too many warnings, too many threats, frustration, anger, lecturing, every so often punishment, and you continue this, will you not get into arguments necessarily with that child over what he did to his brother, and he denies it, and the brother says he did, and he feels like you're always picking on him, and so now he gets disrespectful? You see, if you don't handle, for example, the sibling problem, you're kind of inviting disrespect, because in the past, you acknowledge that I just don't know what to do about them, the way they treat each other. It's awful. Okay. So if you go one at a time, one, you have to pick out which one's the really bad one. Two, you have to decide when you fixed it, when you've conquered it, when you've made it good enough that you can move on to the next problem. That's two. And three, aren't they intertwined? In other words, the chore shirking can lead to arguments, can lead to disrespect, can lead to bad moods, can lead to more mistreatment of brother because I'm in a bad mood. They're all intertwined. But Dr. Rhea, how do you change all at once? Well, you change all at once because you change your principles. In other words, you decide, how are you going to be less wordy and more action? How will you act, not yak? Now, that principle can go across the board. It can deal with a whole bunch of different types of behavior problems. You can do that. And even if, okay, let's say that even if you said, okay, I'm going to use four of these discipline principles, get my authority back, get my confidence back, get my house back, because I don't like a house being run by an 11-year-old's moods and misbehavior. All right. Then can you actually get that good that fast? See, if you say, should I change all at once? Well, you're not going to change all at once. You're going to change directions. So all the stuff that wasn't working before and was causing all kinds of frustration, you're now going to do your very best to eliminate, which is going to take time, and move in a different direction with your discipline. Not unusually, if someone does this, they see rather dramatic changes in a very short period of time. Two or three sessions, they're telling me things like, things are so much better, I can't believe I'm living with the same kid. They will say, well, I think I've got it now. I think I've got it. I'll call you if I need to down the road. Okay. 6 months, 8 months, 10 months later, I get a call. Yeah, things, oh boy, things are kind of back where they were. They just kind of went back where they were. Okay. So they come in and we talk. And things went back the way they were because the parents went back the way they were. It's more common that that happens than that the child has the attitude of, look, I don't like this new you. I don't like this calmer, more confident, more follow through, more confidently authoritative you. I don't like this, and I'm really going to ratchet up my misbehavior. That happens in the beginning because the child looks at the parent and thinks, you've changed the rules. What are you doing? What am I getting? Why am I getting disciplined for this? You didn't used to discipline me for this. You used to argue with me. Now you're disciplining me. Yeah, in the beginning, the child does resist and usually ratchet it up. In one of my books, I call it escalation. But that usually passes 8, 9, 10 months down the road if there is a flare-up. Barring some big change in the child's life. You know, he's changed schools or he's hanging around with some kid that is new to the neighborhood and all of a sudden this kid's giving him all kinds of great ideas on how to be sneaky and deceptive with your parents. No discernible circumstantial changes, then most of the time it is the parents slipped back into the way they used to do it, which is not all that hard to understand, because to the degree that the child has been behaving this way for 8 years, so too have the parents. It's hard to improve on bad habits. You have to stay with it. If you do it for 3 months and things are dramatically better and then you get sloppy again and they drift back to the way they were, that is to be expected. So, if you discover that things aren't going in the way you want, and there's a lot of friction points in your family with this particular child or children, change all at once to the best of your ability. Over time, you will form better habits, and those habits will reshape your whole approach to the situation. And your child will most likely respond to the new you in a much, much better way. All righty. When we come back, got a question from Marty who, well, no. I'm going to go to Stan because he needs a little more time on this. It's a longer call. We had a call on one of the shows that was addressing spanking. And someone called in and said that they had heard, they had been told, et cetera, that spanking is terrible and evil and awful under any circumstances, with any children, at any time, with any parent, no matter how much love, no matter what the infraction, no matter what, it was just awful and terrible and it led to all kinds of terrible things because there's research that says this. Well, it's not really research. It's survey stuff. So Stan called in, I think, after that call, I believe. And he wanted to offer his thoughts on this, and for whatever the reason, I took the call and I tagged it as a look back call. So we'll find out why here in a moment.
Are you through? No, I'm doing society a favor. So
the doctor will be with you in just a moment.
Solidarity HealthShare began out of the Christian tradition of neighbor helping neighbor. They're a nonprofit medical cost-sharing ministry in which their members share in each other's eligible medical expenses. Solidarity HealthShare is not insurance, but rather an alternative way to pay for medical costs that adheres to the teachings of the Catholic Church. They'll never share in a medical care that goes against their values and morals, such as abortion, contraception, and sterilization. More information available at SolidarityHealthShare.org or at 844-313-4999.
Miracles are miracles because they're different than regular daily life. A miracle is a reminder that something beyond nature can act within nature. Miracles are meant to open our eyes that more is always going on than just the normal humdrum of the daily life. Miracles are supposed to make us realize that our moral choices are impacting an invisible world that once in a while breaks through into our workaday world. The Blessed Mother predicted the miracle of the sun, and she made it clear that she was using it as proof of the truth of her message. In other words, when the sun stops dancing and you get back to church, to work, to home, remember what's at stake when you pray the rosary.
Cresta in the Afternoon, weekdays at 4 Eastern on EWTN Radio.
Do you own popular index mutual funds or ETFs? If so, you're automatically own shares of companies that conflict with your moral beliefs. Ave Maria mutual funds are managed to conform to pro-life and pro-family values. Long-term investors can invest in the no-load Ave Maria mutual funds. The experienced professional portfolio managers make decisions based on investment fundamentals and pro-life values. You can learn more about Ave Maria Mutual Funds today at 866-AVE-MARIA or visit AveMariaFunds.com.
Dr. Ray Guarendi here, dispensing DACA's in on the Doctor Is In. taking your child from the before picture on Bratz today to poster child for PTA Parent of the Year. I'm Dr. Ray Guarendi, program Doctor is In. This is the Friday version, Look Back Friday, where we take some previously recorded calls, and then I extrapolate, hopefully in a good direction. I want to say more about them. So Stan was responding to a call that we got from a young mother who had been told, and from many directions, that spanking is terrible and evil and awful, and it creates all kinds of terrible problems, no matter who does it, what conditions, what child, wherever. And by the way, the research doesn't say that. It very much depends. So Stan had some comments here. Stan is 73 years old, and he says he was raised by the rule of the belt. I would never be that way, but I did once with my son, he says. And I apologize to him all the time for it. Now, Stan, I'm just going to be saying maybe it's time to quit apologizing. But he says, growing up the way I did left scars. Stan, are you there?
Yes, I am.
You know, I don't know if you heard my opening monologue or not, but what I was saying was, when somebody is really heavy into spanking, or in your case, belt whoopings, there was probably a lot of other problems within the parenting. A lot. All right. Lack of warmth, lack of consistency, my way or the highway punk attitude, all kinds of things. And the belt was one of the really bad things in the parenting. Is that an accurate summary?
Yeah, but I think a lot of it has to do with the family heritage. My mother and dad and we're the Germans from Russia, Volga Germans, and they were raised on the farm, and everybody worked. I mean, everybody, and everybody participated. But if you didn't, you got the leather strap back then. And I'm hearing that story from cousins, you know, being shared from their parents back in Kansas, where my family's from, or cousins here locally. But it wasn't a lack of love, but then again, at the same time, it was the punishment aspect of it, the recourses of not performing. You know, I wasn't born back in Kansas. I was born here in Portland, Oregon. But I went to a parochial school, and I was raised by the belt. I mean, the old rule of the third child. Yeah, I was the 9 years difference between my second brother and myself, and my younger brother, you know, is three. So if anybody was going to catch hell, it was me, and I had to work through a lot of it. I mean, middle of the summer, I could never wear shorts because I had welts all up and down my legs. If I didn't mow the lawn right.
You see what you're saying, though, Stan. You're not talking the kind of spanking that can be done in a home under control and for reasons. You're talking, kid, you don't do it, I'm going to wail on you. I mean, that's really what you're talking. And pretty much everybody would agree, me included, an awful way to raise a kid. In defense, and some are going to say, there's no defense, doctor, it's indefensible. But to say this, is it safe to say, Stan, that that's all they knew? They didn't read parenting books. They weren't sophisticated. Maybe they weren't even all that educated. That's all they knew. That's how they were raised. That's how they thought you needed to straighten up a child. Is it safe to say that?
Yes, it is. And that's definitely it. But here's where I was going with my message, is that being raised that way, when I then became married, and I got married and started having children, I had two fine sons. The lady earlier was sharing about her success with I have a 45-year-old captain in fireman. He's a captain in the fire department. And my youngest son is a city policeman. Well, my oldest son, when he started Little League, we told him never to ever, ever swing the bat in the house or around his little brother. And my wife and I were busy around the house.
Stan, I'm going to hurry you here. You're going to run out of time at the top of the show.
Okay.
So anyway, you spanked him.
My oldest son nailed my youngest son in the head with a baseball bat.
So you spanked him for that.
And I picked him up and I shook him so hard. And I had to, I mean, I didn't, I always swore I would never spank, and I didn't, but I shook him and scared him so bad. And I still, to this day, apologize for,
I think that's enough. Stan, you reacted for the emotional impulse of the moment. Yep. You didn't hurt him, I'm assuming, and you don't need to keep beating yourself up over this. You don't. You made a mistake. As you look back on it, how many years ago? 50? 60?
Maybe 40.
Yeah, okay, my math was wrong on that. But 40 years ago, Stan, it's time to let that one go. I'm sure that your son doesn't think you need to apologize consistently for that. I think the reason you're doing all that apologizing is because of your own upbringing, and you saw what that did to you. And you're saying, I would never, ever, 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 ever want to have my kid have that kind of feeling, right?
Exactly.
Yeah. But it's totally different. Totally different context. What you described from your parents was ongoing. Yours was a quick, impulsive, emotional reaction. Very different.
Yeah.
So that's something you got to lay to rest, my friend, for heaven's sake. And I'm sure you apologized back then.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, I think that's all tied in, my friend, to the fact that you just saw your own upbringing as so ugly in a lot of ways, and you said, I don't even want to even smell like that with my kid. Well, okay, you had a moment. My friend, are you God? Do you not sin? Time to lay that one to rest. I've often said, with my tongue planted firmly in my cheek, there are only three sins left in American culture. Pretty much do what you want. Morals have more or less been kicked to the curb. But there are three sins left. One is smoking. One is having more than 1.86 children in wedlock with the same committed spouse. And the third is spanking. A lady said to me one time, I was at a talk, and she came up to me after the talk, and she said, I'm new to town, and I joined a mother's group. And I mentioned that I had swatted my preschooler on the bottom for something. She said, I got the feeling that I could have said, yeah, I'm coming to town because I'm really trying to get away from a motorcycle group that I was in for the longest time. And I just needed to shed myself of that lifestyle for 7 years. She said, I got the feeling that if I'd have said something like that, they'd have all been curious and asked me all kinds of questions. But I happened to mention that I swatted my toddler's preschooler's bottom. It was a collective gasp. I saw a survey, this was some years back, that said, it's asked a question. And again, in any survey, you can get a lot of results, which you want, given the way the question's phrased. Which is worse, having an adulterous relationship or hitting a child? The majority of the people said hitting a child. Now, again, hitting, it's a loaded word, is it not? If I say to you, you can't use timeout. Why? Well, you know, because I was reading where this one person put their kid in a closet for 4 hours for timeout. You could legitimately say that's not timeout. That's abuse. Well, no, it's the same thing, really. Just away from the things. So, in fact, I'm going to talk a little bit more about this when I come back around, okay? Because I want to make a few more points about this. This is always people say, oh, I can't believe you're promoting spanking. I'm not promoting spanking. I'm saying we need to look at what the research actually says.
What is God's most amazing quality? Surely it must be His enormous mercy towards sinners. This mercy is revealed in the gospel through Jesus Christ. Jesus' very name means salvation from sin. The Eucharist is the sacrament of redemption, we learn from the Catechism of the Catholic Church. In order to receive this mercy, however, we must know and acknowledge that we indeed have sinned and are in need of forgiveness. If we say we have no sin, we deceive ourselves, St. John's Gospel reminds us. But if we confess our sins, God will cleanse us of all unrighteousness. John Paul II asserted that conversion requires convincing of sin. As a physician must probe a wound before treating it, God, through His Word and His Spirit, casts a living light on sin. But along with the sting of conscience comes the salve of the certainty of redemption. So the Spirit of Truth is also the consoler. This is Peggy Stanton, and this has been the Order of Malta's Minute with the Catechism.
Christ is the answer, with Father John Ricardo.
Here's the new challenge. At least 1 hour a week in front of the Blessed Sacrament, with the goal of an hour a day in front of the Blessed Sacrament. I had a guy come up to me and he says, Father, you know, I'm doing a lot of things. I'm in a men's fellowship. I pray with my wife every day. I go to Mass every Sunday and usually a couple times during the week. I read Scripture. He goes, I want more. I said, do you pray in front of the Blessed Sacrament? He said, outside of Mass, no. I said, I think that's the more. See, all these saints, these are the ones who surround us. These are the ones who ran before us. These are the ones who fought well, who kept the faith. They would tell you, as would every single saint in heaven right now, you cannot run this race if you don't spend time with the Master. Whatever else we're doing, it's second, third, and fourth. First things need to be first. And the first thing is to be with the Master, and the Master is Jesus.
Good to have you with me. I'm Dr. Ray Guarendi. Program Doctor is in Monday through Friday. This is Look Back Friday. I am extrapolating on a call that came before the hard break from Stan, who says he was raised by the belt. And what he described was not necessarily uncommon 60, 70, 80 years ago, and pretty much all the way back in human history, which is corporal punishment was pretty severe. And it came with belts and switches and things like that. And that is, I think, in many respects, what a lot of folks think of when they think of spanking. They think of this over-the-top kind of stuff that was practiced in days gone by. Now, the danger, of course, is looking at those people and say they were all Neanderthals, they were all terrible and awful and horrible people. Well, at that time, and I'm not saying this was good, but at that time, this was pretty much the accepted practice. Dr. A, the accepted practice doesn't make it the good practice. I understand that. But again, there is a tendency, I call it chronological snobbery, there is a tendency that we look back and we judge people's conduct on the basis of what we now think and practice. The last probably 30, 40, 50 years, spanking has taken a spanking. I mean, flat out, under those circumstances, from most people's perspective, spanking is awful and terrible and bad, and it's led by the experts. And there's all kinds of survey data. And see, this is the problem. I don't have time to get into all this, but you can't research spanking in a typical, well-done sense. It's all survey. It's all asking. It's retrospective, meaning looking back. You can't design a double-blind, placebo-controlled, gold standard-type experiment to study spanking. One of the things I always say to parents is you have to judge spanking like you judge all discipline. How does it work in your home, with your morals, with your value system, with your preferences? If you don't want to spank, don't spank. But don't look at somebody else who has swatted a bottom and call them evil incarnate, which is unfortunately what happens. I was on a TV show once, local TV show. There was a child development person on there who believed that anybody who ever swatted a bottom, under any circumstances at all, no matter what, is just awful, terrible and awful. Had the parenting license taken from them. The host of the show asked me, Ray, did you ever spank your kids? I said, oh, yeah. Yeah, I said, some of them got some swats. Some of them never did because of the temperament of the child, but most of them was under age 5, 6, 7, somewhere in there. She wheeled on me. Your children fear you then. I said, whoa, lady, I fear you here. Tone it down, would you? I said, I didn't say that. I wanted to say that, but I didn't say that. I did say this. I said, how can you say that? Do you know me? Do you know my children? How would you know they fear me? Then I said something I think that really shook her up. I said, because I want my children to fear me under certain circumstances. I want them to fear my reaction. I want them to be respectful of what dad might do. Yes. I don't fear police officers. But if one pulled up behind me with the light bar flashing and came up and said, let me see your license now, I think I'd have some anxiety. I don't fear judges. I got some friends that are judges. I don't want to be in their courtroom because I would fear them. It's context. Well, anyway, we did a book called Back to the Family. Back to the Family was my second book. We interviewed strong families in all 50 states. We asked them, will you tell us how you're raising great kids? Because they'd been nominated as a great family that a teacher knew. And one of the questions was, do you, did you, have you, will you spank? About 70% of them said, yeah. Mostly when the kids were little, not our main discipline, and under control. Now, these families were the best families that these teachers had seen, with the nicest kids, the least aggressive kids, by the way, the most well-adjusted kids. Well, you know, Dr. A, okay, that is not a sign that spanking is good. That is just a sign that the better parenting overcame the bad spanking. What the research really says, as best you can parse it out, is that bad spanking is bad. Stan essentially said he got spanked if he didn't mow the, he got the belt. If he didn't mow the lawn right, oh, for heaven's sake. You know, talk about a parent responding in frustration, not to teach any kind of lesson whatsoever. The other interesting point is this. Those folks most violently opposed to any kind of spanking under any circumstances, no matter what, are the ones who would say, spanking in and of itself is automatically evil. You know, it's like the Catholic Church would teach that some sins, like abortion, are everywhere and all times grave, terrible. Well, they view that spanking is that way. Any kind of spanking anywhere at all times is awful, terrible. And it creates aggressive children. It creates maladjusted children. It creates antisocial children. It creates children who are much, much, much more likely to go to jail. All those things, all the indictments. What Stan described when he was growing up, he sounded like an elderly gentleman. What he described was an upbringing where he just got the belt all the time. Now, maybe his particular upbringing was excessive, but he did say that the particular ethnic group that was in their circle at that time, that was their practice. But I think it's safe to say that 100 years ago, what was practiced as corporal punishment was way beyond anything people would practice now. 100 years ago, you did that now, you'd be in big trouble. So if spanking automatically, reflexively, is, no matter what circumstances, raises aggressive children, raises antisocial children, raises psychologically traumatized children, raises children who will go on to do this to their children, why didn't it then? Why were all of the statistics about social pathologies way below what they are today? Far less people in prison. Far, 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 far less murders. Far less acting out of violence of any kind 150 years ago, 100 years ago. Why? If spanking is guilty of creating these kinds of adults, then given the intensity of what was commonly practiced as corporal punishment 100, 150 years ago, We should have one whole major league messed up bunch of adults. And according to all statistics, we didn't. Now, one might say, well, Dr. Ray, you're comparing apples and oranges. That was a very different social time. I agree. I agree with you totally. It was a very different social time. But your premise was that that kind of spanking automatically does this to people. Why did it not automatically do that then? Now, don't mishear me. I'm not saying we should return to that, and I'm not saying that was good. I'm just simply saying, if that's your premise, again, it's context, and it's coming down to the person, the parent, and the control.
Bishop Robert Barron on the priesthood.
You as a parent apply Galatians 5. Is watch your kids as they move into the religious space, if you want to put it that way. I, you know, made noises about the priesthood on and off when I was a little kid. My parents were never oppressive about it. They never pressed me in that direction. But they would quietly indicate an openness to that, or like, that's a good thing. I remember I still have it upstairs, a Bible that my parents got me for Christmas in 1969. I'm a little kid. And it's, you know, from Mom and Dad to Bob, Christmas 1969. They knew, they sensed I was kind of interested in religious things. So I would say that, don't be pushy, of course, but don't go the other direction. That's, my generation got too much of that, was, oh, back off. Who am I to tell you what to do? You make up your mind. No, I think gently, quietly, affirming that, yeah, that's a good thing you're thinking about, and you should be open to that.
EWTN. Live truth. Live Catholic.
I'm Dr. Stan Williams. Contemplate the universe with me.
You do not know the work of God, who is working in everything.
Every cell of your body contains a helix strand of DNA made from 3 billion molecules. But only 1.5% of those 3 billion are the genes used to produce the proteins that determine your biological traits. Initially, this caused scientists to label the remaining 2.9 billion junk DNA. But today, scientists are discovering it's probably not junk at all, but critical to our lives and the well-being of later generations. But when asked exactly what good are those billions of mysterious molecules, they really have no idea. But God knows, and one day you will too. At AveMariaRadio.net, under Resources, explore the universe with me. I'm Dr. Stan Williams.
Good to have you with me, Dr. Ray Guarendi. Program, The Doctor is In. This is the Friday version where we take some previous calls, live calls, and we replay parts of them anyway. And then I talk off in another direction on the call. Any given call usually can go in many different directions. So let's find out, in fact, what Marty has to say about wanting to size up his daughter's boyfriend. Your daughter has a boy. How old's your daughter?
She's 30.
Well, that just answered your question.
Well, she's had a string of guys in her life that just did not necessarily exhibit the qualities that a father would like to see for his daughter. But she's been... I'll use the word dating this guy now for a few months, and I'm getting kind of positive reports on him, and I finally got to meet him. I think it was unexpected. I had to go down and put a new battery in my daughter's car, and he was there. So I introduced myself, and I reached over, and I extended my hand and shook hands with him, and I thought, oh, boy, that's a wet fish. And I thought, that's not the way a man shakes hands. And I guess my prejudice or my age was just kind of showing that I just kind of went, And then I thought, you know, most boyfriends probably could have changed the battery in my daughter's car. But I said, hey, why don't you, well, I'm not into cars. And I went, And I don't know. I haven't said anything to my daughter, but I want to say, are you sure?
What would it matter if you did?
How far away should I stay from this?
Well, Marty, what would it matter if you did say anything? Has she listened on the other guys?
Sort of, a little bit, which is why she didn't end up with any of those guys, thank God. But, you know, I have my idea of a man that I would like to see my daughter with, but, you know, it's a different generation. They ride bicycles when they're 30. They do stuff not quite like I did. So I just, you know, I'm just always keeping an eye out. But
well,
I don't want to see her get into something again and then be like,
Several things.
Yeah,
I would
ahead.
Put less stock in the handshake than I would put in the fact that he didn't want to help her change her battery. Changing a battery is nothing. It's absolutely nothing. And he could easily have gone to YouTube and pulled up a little video on how to change a battery in that particular make and model of the car. I'm assuming it's in the motor compartment and not buried underneath the back seat. Okay, that's the first thing. Second thing, the past guys, hopefully she came to it on her own and saw that these relationships were not something I would want to be long-term. So if she has some judgment about that, that's a good sign, because maybe she'll have some judgment about this guy. If, in fact, the brief warning signs that you're caught up in turn out to be much more. Then, if you're going to approach her about this, I would ask one simple question. What do you like about him? No, more than one. What do you like about him? And how will you decide if this is a good long-term relationship? That's what I would ask her, because I'd want her to hear it. If you say something, you're going to have less credibility because you've met the guy one time. That's it. So she could easily invalidate anything you say. If you say about the handshake, she could look at you and say, well, Dad, that doesn't mean anything. Or if you say, well, why didn't he help you put your battery in? Well, I don't think he really knows how to do that, Dad. I mean, I talked to him about it, and he really was confused, and he didn't want to harm my car by doing something wrong, and he figured you'd know more about it. So she'd probably give explanations. So my suggestion would be you ask her to explain to you what it is about this fella that she's attracted to. That's what I would do. But the bottom line, Marty, the bottom line is really she's 30 years old. And if she wants to mess up a relationship or head into a bad one, neither I nor you can do much about it. Well, there's a bottom line to the bottom line. It's very hard for us parents. For we parents? No, it'd be for us parents, prepositional objective. For us parents to step back and watch somebody make what we believe is a bad decision, bad choice of a prospective partner. It is very tough. I remember seeing a survey once, this fascinating survey. Those of you ladies listening in my vast audience of 217 people now, they found that the best measuring stick, which is what Marty wanted to size up his daughter's boyfriend, is the impressions of her girlfriends. The girls, by and large, are more socially aware, more socially sensitive to stuff like this. So, if her girlfriends have doubts about this guy that she's seeing, reservations, then in fact, that's something that might want to be considered. And then along with that are parents. Now, this dovetails with Marty's call, because by and large, all things considered, parents being older, I have to say, is it safe to say that parents in most cases are chronologically older than their children? Maybe not emotionally, but chronologically. So given that, parents are generally better at sizing up a relationship for the well-being of their adult child. Now that said, I get a lot of adult children talking to me, and they're frustrated at how unfair their parents are to their spouse. That they have a very good, loving spouse, and the parents have not accepted that spouse. Yeah, I get that. But in the beginning, let's say, of a relationship where the parents have some real reservations, that's one decent sign that there could be some pitfalls on this road to courtship or however it unfolds. Now, all that said, our problem is that we have to stand by most of the time. Because typically, here's the way it unfolds. We offer our opinion. It is either not accepted, rejected, taken defensively, ignored. Once you get that signal, it usually isn't wise to keep going anymore. Our temptation as parents is, well, if we keep repeating it, if we keep approaching it from different angles, if we keep commenting, for example, when our adult child talks about their frustration in this relationship, and then we want to jump in and more or less give a version of, I told you so, or what are you doing? It's hard to stifle that, especially if we've had experience in the past that our child, our adult child, is allowed to be critical of the person they're seeing. We're not. It's the old, I can be critical about my own children. Don't you be critical about my children. Same thing with us parents who are watching our adult children make some bad choices in a spouse, in a partner, in a courtship, whatever it is, in a relationship. And we see it. We see the pitfalls. We see the risks. We see the bad choices. We see the things that they don't see. We see the things that they think they can change. And we've tried to approach it. And when we have, we got shut down. So after that, really, it's kind of a law of diminishing returns. After that, the more you say, the more you risk driving your adult child further into the relationship with that person because they think they got to defend them. All right. I'm Dr. Ray.
You're not fit yet.
Not fit. I'm the doctor.
No, doctor. I'm the doctor, and I say that you're not fit.
You may be a doctor, but I'm the doctor.
You're listening to The Doctor. Come in. Pull up a couch. Let's talk. The doctor is in.
The Encounter Online Virtual Conference is December 27th through the 29th. 15 powerful speakers, prophecy, healing, and impartation. Do you want more?
The truth is, brothers and sisters, there is no solution to the cultural and church crisis but Jesus Christ the Lord, alive in a church that's empowered by the Holy Spirit. Period. That's it. He's finding out right now who's with me, who wants to live in the Spirit of God, who wants to follow me. That's what he's doing. It's going to be a work of God for the glory of the Father glorifying the Son in the power of the Holy Spirit through a people who are alive to him and are proclaiming him with everything they've got.
Register today at EncounterConference.org. That's EncounterConference.org.
Okay, I've been a Catholic for 5 years, but I suffered under a lot of things due to my Protestantism as a Pentecostal, and I just want to personally ask God to bless you for your ministry, for everything you do, and the help that you give people.
EWTN, helping people grow in their love and understanding of God.
Do you wish you could have discussions about difficult topics with your adult children? If so, don't worry, you're not alone. Hi, I'm Dr. Greg Popchak.
And I'm Lisa Popchak. And our new book, Having Meaningful, Sometimes Difficult Conversations with Your Adult Sons and Daughters, can help you draw closer to your adult children and help guide them on the path to more faithful and meaningful lives.
You can get our latest book and all of our other books on the store page at AveMariaRadio.net. That's AveMariaRadio.net.
Doing pretty good, sir. Appreciate your time. What you doing for America?
Expanding your super ego while shrinking your id. Do you have an ID card? Your id card? A little Freudian lingo. Super ego was the conscience. The id was the cauldron of the passions that are always seeking expression. They have to be controlled by the ego. He didn't use ego in terms of what we use ego as, which is a super inflated sense of self. For Freud, the ego was the realistic band director navigating life. How you deal with these passions that are always threatening to gurgle up and take over. Anyway, a little Freudian primer there. Do not have time to go any further with look back calls. So, as I often love to do, my wife years ago gave me a C.S. Lewis calendar. And in this calendar, he just quotes from different days and quotes from C.S. Lewis. And this one came from God in the Dock, written in 1946. If Christianity should happen to be true, then it is quite impossible that those who know this truth and those who don't should be equally well equipped for leading a good life. Knowledge of the facts must make a difference to one's actions. Really, that's what logically follows. There's no way around it. If Christ was God, which means Christianity is true, because it is the only religion centered around a person who said he is God. Buddha didn't, and Muhammad didn't, and Gandhi didn't, Mr. Rogers didn't. So if, in fact, Christianity is true, then what Jesus said is the best way to live. Pascal died very young. He was a mathematician, but he was also a very, very religiously thoughtful guy. And there was something called Pascal's Wager. To summarize it briefly, it essentially said, live as though Christianity is true, because it's a good way to live. And in the end, if you're wrong, you don't know you're wrong. You die. You lose nothing. You lose nothing. If you're right, you gain everything. You gain eternal life. So he said, if you're a betting person, you're going to bet on the fact that Christianity is true, because you got nothing to lose and everything to gain. Now, someone might say, well, no, I do have a lot to lose because I don't want to follow those morals. All right. But one could be convinced that, in fact, those morals, wherever they came from, you know, if they didn't come from Christ being God, they came from some guy. And they do seem to work. I mean, they got all kinds of psychological support. As one of my most recent books talks about, Jesus the Master Psychologist, I talk about why the way Jesus said to live is really psychologically the best way to live. So how did he know this? Did he just stumble upon it? Did he just happen to be some dude that had a real nice sense of morality, social guidance, psychological savvy? Is that what he was? If indeed he was God, then in fact, the way he said to live, whether you agree with it, whether you don't, whether you think it's dumb, whether you don't, whether you think it's constricting, whether you don't, is the best way to live for freedom, for peace, for satisfaction. It is. He's not going to tell you how to live and basically say, I'm here to constrict you. I'm here to throw morals at you that are just going to stifle you. And they're going to keep you from doing the really good things that you want to do. That doesn't make any sense. Because if he is God, he knows how to live. He knows how he made us. He knows how we function. Lewis said it. It's quite impossible that no people who know Christianity be true, and those who don't should be equally well equipped for leading a good life. Facts make a difference. Thanks for joining me. I'm Dr. Ray Guarendi here. Program Doctor is in. Good Lord permitting. I'll see you Monday. Walk with God. That's a fact.
For information on Dr. Ray's presentations, books, and CDs, visit DRRay.com and follow him on Facebook. The Doctor Is In is a co-production of Ave Maria Radio and EWTN Radio and carried across the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network.